And on November 27th of 2013, I had a guest on my program, and I had her on because I had an interest in her subject matter, and that was Dr. Mary T. Newport. And she is the author of Alzheimer's Disease, What If There Was a Cure? And her website is coconutketones.com, coconutketones.com. And so what we're going to do for the last 2 hours, and we'll probably have a little bit of time at the end for questions and comments and whatnot, but what we're going to do is re-listen to that program. I did so just a couple of days ago, and I thought, oh my goodness, this would be just a wonderful thing to have on after Dr. Potts, and he was just wonderful, and his book is wonderful, and Dr. Newport's book is wonderful. So I thought this would be just a terrific way to address this issue. So we're going to hear now the audio file from that program of November 27th, 2013. Okay, Mr. Producer. November 27th, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the cold, cold suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com, where you will see the names of every single guest that I've had on RBN since October 23rd, 2010, as well as links to their websites. Just visit my website and click on the radio schedule button. Please also visit spingolaspeaks.info for links and files. One of our very talented listeners established the site to augment information not found elsewhere. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. It seems I've been having trouble with my other email. I haven't been getting everybody's email, and so if you've sent me an email and I have not responded at my regular email address, deanna@spingola.com, please use the comment@spingola.com if you want to say something. Anyway, join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. Of course, we know that tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and so we will be rebroadcasting. Tomorrow's guest will be Dr. Harold Rome, who I had on the program back in October, the end of October. It's the 25th of October. And since that time, he has passed away. So that is who will be the guest tomorrow. And on Friday, we are also taking the day off. And the guest will be Tony Pantelaresco. All righty. Today's guest is Dr. Mary T. Newport. I'm sorry, Newport, N-E-W-P-O-R-T. Her website is coconutketones.com. Coconut and K-E-T-O-N-E-S.com. Welcome to the program, Dr. Mary Newport.
Good morning, Deanna. Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule, and particularly the day before Thanksgiving when most of us will be cooking and getting ready for tomorrow. So I thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome. We'll be doing that later today.
Indeed. I already started, yes. Okay. Your website, up at the top, it says, What If There Was a Cure for Alzheimer's Disease and No One Knew?
Mm-hmm.
That's very intriguing.
Right.
Because a lot of people who are older are experiencing this problem. And it seems to be just, sometimes it just comes on real sudden, and sometimes it's incremental. They just start forgetting things. But there is a cure. There is something that people can do, and you have the guidelines and the answer. And so I'm so grateful you could share that with us today. So I'm just going to turn the time over to you. It says, also on your website, it says, if you need directions for the use of coconut oil, please refer to the diet guidelines and facts. So anyway, tell us how you discovered this, how you got involved with coconut oil, which I use every day.
Okay. Well, it's a bit of a long story, and it's a good thing we have a lot of time to talk about it.
Okay.
But I am a neonatologist. I'm a physician that takes care of sick and premature newborns, and I've been doing this in Florida for 30 years. And that actually ties into how I recognized this, the potential for this, when I saw it, when I read about it. The reason I'm so interested in Alzheimer's is that my husband, Steve, has early onset Alzheimer's disease. He's 63 years old now, and he was only 51 when he started having problems. So it was a major shock to us. I didn't even know that people could get Alzheimer's that early, and it's about 2% of people with Alzheimer's are early onset, which means that it starts before age 65. So Steve worked from home as an accountant for my practice, and he took care of our children growing up. My job is a very strange schedule, you know, that I have to drop everything and run in, you know, when there's a problem in the delivery room, and, you know, take care of premature newborns as they're born and that kind of thing. And we had decided when we were going to have children that, and he volunteered to stay home to be the stable parent so that, you know, our children would have some stability in their life. So he worked, you know, from home as an accountant, and he functioned extremely well at that. You know, it was a full-time job for my practice. And he also was a very active guy, you know, kayaking and always out and about doing yard work and, you know, always getting, you know, plenty of exercise and out in the sun, vitamin D levels, excellent. He also was on a computer, you know, with his job for many hours a day. And when he wasn't working on it, he was playing on it. So he was just, you know, one of the guys very early on who was interested in and having a personal computer and working on it. So there's this whole idea of use it or lose it. He was using it every day, and he still lost it. And that's what Alzheimer's disease does. So when he was about 51, we started noticing some problems where he first was making big payroll mistakes. And so I started sitting down with him. I thought, well, maybe our practice is just getting a little bit larger. And, you know, so I would sit down when he did the payroll to make sure he got it right. And then he started having problems organizing himself and procrastinating to do tax returns, you know, such as a quarterly reports that you need to file. And I found out later, because he taught me how to do these things, that they were kind of eroding, that at this particular, like, quarterly report, I could do it in 20 minutes, and it would take him days at this point to do it.
Oh, my goodness.
That he would shuffle things around, and, you know, just, he was so disorganized. That was the problem. And that can be some of the early signs, you know, of Alzheimer's and some of these other dementias. And but he was also depressed. And then he began having trouble remembering if he'd been to the bank and the post office. And I knew that was clearly not normal. I'm only 2 years younger than him, and I thought I would not ever forget if I'd been to the bank and post office that day. And he would misplace mail, and he couldn't remember if he'd even been to the post office, but he'd put it in odd places in his garage, which was a hoarding nightmare. or, you know, leave it in his truck or whatever. But I didn't know whether I needed to look for the mail, because he couldn't remember if he'd even been to the post office. So
Wow. It
was clearly not normal. And
now, did this create problems, personal problems between you? Was he angry? Did he exhibit anger or frustration to you?
Frustration. But he later told me that he had an inkling that he had a problem for several years before I caught on.
Oh.
That he knew he wasn't functioning as well as he had, you know, 10 years earlier. And he said it was very frustrating. And he would do funny things to try to remember appointments, you know, like he was the one who would usually take our children to like an eye appointment or something. And I would remind him an hour before and he would still forget. So that was frustrating for both of us. And he would hang notes, like post-it notes, from a long piece of tape in a doorway that he had to walk through to remind him of things. So we'd have these things taped, you know, a few times a week, something would be taped there to remind him. And then sometimes he'd still forget, you know, in spite of that. And I thought, well, you know, maybe he's just, you know, midlife crisis kind of thing, or he's distracted, or he's just lost interest in doing this. And, you know, I just didn't really know what was going on. But when he started forgetting, then that was a big problem.
Sure. We do need to take a real quick 3-minute break, and we'll pick this up on the other side. Guest today is Dr. Mary T. Newport. Her website is coconutketones.com. And doctor, did this seem to affect your husband's short-term or long-term memory the most?
At that point, it was more short-term. It was things that were happening going on that day that seemed to be the biggest problem. So given that he was also depressed, you know, we visited a physician, a psychiatrist, and he mentioned dementia at the time, but he basically felt that most likely the memory problems were related to depression, because they can be, and put him on an antidepressant. But, you know, we still continue to see, you know, slow deterioration. And when he was 53, so about 2 years into this, we moved about an hour north so that I could start a new newborn intensive care unit. And he had great difficulty finding his way around, and it was a very small town, just a few north, south, east, west arteries, and he could not remember what street he was on and whether he was heading north or south. And I had to, you know, I was constantly telling him which way to go, and I started calling him Mr. Opposite, because if I told him to turn right, he'd turn left. And that kind of thing would happen. And then he started spending an unusual amount of time looking for things in his garage. He would, in the morning, decide he wanted to find something like the hitch for his truck. And he would be looking for it when I left for the hospital in the morning. And when I came home in the evening, sometimes he would still be looking for it. But then at that point, he couldn't remember what he was looking for, but he was still looking for it.
Bless his heart.
Very frustrating for him. He would be so frustrated, he would be ready to pull his hair out. And I try to convince them, you know, there's no point in doing that. Just move on to doing something else, you know, if you can't find it. But we did accumulate quite a few new hitches for his truck. Some of them never opened, you know, because he would just go out and buy one then, you know. So we have a lot of things like that. We still have.
Now, did you ever consider, like, that it might be dental mercury or toxins or aluminum or metals of some sort
over the years, I've read about all of that, and, you know, all of those are concerns, and I do think that Alzheimer's may be triggered by different things for different people. So, you know, I was aware of those potentials, and, you know, Steve had a few fillings. He didn't really have nearly as many as I have from childhood, probably because he took such good care of his teeth, but... you know, well, we could get into this a little bit later, but I think that in his case, it could be a viral infection. He's had recurrent, prolonged fever blisters the whole time that I had known him, and he once had an infection of these fever blisters around his eye when he was about 30 years old. And that particular virus lives in the nerve, in the nerves. And it just pops out during times of stress or, you know, sun exposure. If you have another infection, a cold or something, this herpes simplex virus can erupt. And that nerves, you know, the nerves to the mouth, you know, on the lips, start deep in the brain near where Alzheimer's starts. And it kind of stands to reason that if it can break out on the mouth, why wouldn't it break out in the brain? You know, those nerves are all...
Oh, sure.
You see what I'm saying?
So, sure.
in his case, I think there's some research in England, you know, showing that in the plaques in the brain in Alzheimer's, 90% of them have the DNA of the herpes simplex virus in the plaques. So they may be a response to infection. You know, that might be part of why certain people with Alzheimer's accumulate a lot of this plaque in the brain. So that's the theory that they're working on, you know, this group in England. So in Steve's case, my gut feeling is that that has a lot to do with it, either the cause of it or contributing to it in some way. So so we got a little sidetracked there, but, you know, as he, you know, his accounting, he continued to have more and more problems, you know, just like paying bills. He would write the checks on, you know, the computer, and he started having problems with that. And I contacted our local Alzheimer family organization in the new city that we moved to, and they recommended a neurologist who has taken care of a lot of Alzheimer's patients. And so Steve went to see him, went with him, and right off the bat, he did a memory test. It's a 30-point test called the mini mental status exam. And if you're normal, you'll get 29 or 30. You know, most people don't even lose 1 point. It's just very, very simple things that we should all know. And that he got only 23 out of 30. And mm-hmm. that was kind of a big shock. And, for example, there's a drawing on there where you have two intersecting trapezoids that you can copy. And the figure wasn't even close. The lines were going in all different directions. It was a very strange, I thought, is that what he's really seeing, you know?
Sure. It was now, is that test surprise. Available online?
I think you can find it online.
And what is the name of that again?
It's the Mini Mental Status Exam, also called MMSE. And that's a simple test. A lot of doctors use it to screen. When you're trying to get into a clinical trial, they usually will screen you with that particular test to get an idea of what level you're at with Alzheimer's. So he was already kind of at the mild to moderate level of dementia. And, you know, the neurologist did a whole battery of tests, blood work to rule out B12 deficiency and vitamin D deficiency. All that was normal. Hypothyroidism can cause memory issues. That was ruled out. And then he had an MRI that was actually called normal at that point, which it often is in the earlier stages of Alzheimer's. And so he felt that he had some type of dementia, but he didn't really want to call it Alzheimer's right away or treat it right away, because once you get on the Alzheimer's meds, it's considered, many doctors consider that that's a lifelong decision, you know, that you once you get on them, you need to stay on them. And he didn't want to commit him to that until he was really more sure that that's what he had. And so he started seeing Steve every 6 months, and actually, the very next time we saw him, he had already gotten worse and had developed a tremor, and, you know, his score had deteriorated, and he decided to go ahead that most likely he did have Alzheimer's, and to put him on Aricept, which is one of the Alzheimer's drugs that keeps one of the neurotransmitters, one of the chemicals in the brain, it keeps that out more elevated. You know, basically, I was, you know, still a little worried, making sure we had the right diagnosis. And so we have a facility called the Byrd Alzheimer Institute at University of South Florida. And it's one of the major centers. We're just very fortunate to have it right here, where they do both animal and human research and see patients under the same roof. And they saw Steve did a whole battery of tests and came to the same conclusion that he most likely had early onset Alzheimer's. So we started keeping our eyes open for clinical trials. You know, we thought, well, you know, like Aricept and Namenda, Exelon, those drugs for Alzheimer's, they don't really claim it's going to improve the disease, but in about half of people, it may slow it down for about 6 months.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
The extent of their claim. So we were looking for something more hopeful than that, and he would get disqualified from the clinical trials that were available at that time because he had a history of depression. And I thought that was very strange because, you know, if you had early onset Alzheimer's disease and knew it and were aware of it, wouldn't you be depressed? So to exclude somebody from a clinical trial because they were depressed seemed very bizarre to me, but that's just the way it was at that point. So, you know, at this time, now we're up to 2006, and he's about 56 years old, and he can no longer turn on a computer,
wow,
do simple math,
oh,
or even use a calculator.
Goodness.
Yeah, he had lost, you know, all of his accounting skills in about over about 5 years.
All right, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we do have to take a three-minute break. We will be right back. Deanna, our guest today is Dr. Mary T. Newport. Her website is coconutketones.com. And you were telling us about your husband Steve's problem. And such an early age, it started at the age of 51. And then right before the break, you said that he had actually lost the ability to turn on the computer. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, he couldn't even do any simple math or even remember how to use a calculator, and he was an accountant. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, also, that same year, 2006, he had to stop driving. Our daughter had broken down a few hours from where we live, and he went up to kind of rescue her, help her get her car fixed, and then he was supposed to follow her home, and it was about 9:30 in the evening, and it was dark, and I'm expecting him to pull in the driveway, and I get a phone call from him, and he said, I'm in Jacksonville, which is on the opposite coast, 3 hours in the wrong direction
from where we lived,
and he had somehow missed the turn, you know, to get onto I-75 south to head towards where we live, and he couldn't remember how to communicate with our daughter. And he said, I said, well, why didn't you pull off at one of the exits and turn around? He said, I just couldn't get over. For 3 hours, he couldn't get over. It was so strange. And so I stayed on the phone with him until he got turned around the other direction. Then I called him about an hour later to make sure he headed south instead of north on I-75. And he still ended up getting off of the expressway somehow and got a little bit lost. And we decided the best thing would be to spend a night in a hotel and just wait in the morning. And I would have gone to get him, except that I was on call. I'm a physician, and I was on call at my hospital, so I couldn't.
Now you're in Florida?
Yeah, we're in Florida.
Okay.
And we're in the 50s today, which is a lot colder than usual, so, but not nearly as cold as you are. So we're okay with that. So he had to stop driving after that. It was just too frightening, and we were worried, you know, if he got into an accident because of poor reflexes or something, that other people could be involved, and we just didn't want that to happen. So
now, was he willing to do that, or was he very?
He was, but it was very, very depressing to him, and even, you know, it affected me too, because he used to do certain errands, and he could no longer do any of that, and any appointment that he had to go to, I needed to be able to take him to. So, you know, it's a, you know, the caregiver is very affected too, you know, when these things happen. So, but for him, it was very, very depressing, but he knew he had to do it. He was very aware of his problems. Some people are not. Some are in total denial, and they just really don't recognize that they have a problem, but he did. So I think that really contributed to his depression quite a bit, the awareness of it.
Sure. But at least he was aware of it. And because I know there are some people that just get angry and they just become very belligerent.
Right. And he wasn't that way. He was not that way about it. He more turned inward with it, I think, with the depression than outwardly, you know, manifesting, you know, the way you're talking about. And so some people that, you know, do have that type of behavior problem have a frontal temporal lobe dementia, where it starts in a different part of the brain than Alzheimer's. But ultimately, a lot of these dementias end up with, in the end, you know, very similar symptoms. It's just, you know, the symptoms that they begin with kind of depend on what part of the brain it starts in. With Alzheimer's, it tends to be the areas that are affected by memory, you know, that control memory.
Sure.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's I-C-A-N-G-E-T, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one of them from Amazon.com. I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. I was a little bit alarmed, as I have always been in good health. I started this regime as soon as it arrived, and I have noted that the heaviness in my chest is gone and the pressure headaches I have been having are lessened. I am hoping to see greater results as time progresses, as I am an avid non-user of pharmaceuticals and avoid them at all cost if possible. This was, I think, a great alternative to heart medication. Not that I am a doctor, and for some, there is no choice, but again, for someone like me, I am so far pleased with the results. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Yeah, so...
Okay, so he has this terrible problem, and what did you do? I mean, he was on antidepressants, you went to a psychiatrist.
Right, he was on Alzheimer's medications, and, you know, we just continued to see him deteriorate, and by 2008, I just really felt like he was on a downward spiral. He had a lot of physical symptoms at that point. He had a tremor in his hand, so it was very hard for him to eat. Like, if you would try to eat rice or peas or something, they would fall off the fork. And so he was eating with a big spoon. And, yeah, when he would talk, he would often have trouble finding the words, and he would get stuck mid-sentence. And if he was trying to find the words, his jaw would tremor. We'd see that quite a bit. And then he could no longer run, just physically pick up a speed and run. And he had a very slow, weird gait, just not a normal gait, you know, when he would walk. So we were seeing a lot of that kind of thing. He couldn't remember if he'd eaten lunch or dinner. Like, you know, I tend to have long hours sometimes. And and I'd come home and ask him, well, were you able to get dinner? And he'd say, oh, yeah, yeah. And then, but he lost 10 pounds over 3 weeks. And I thought, what is going on? It was a very busy time in the newborn ICU at that particular point. And I started looking for evidence that he'd eaten anything, and I couldn't find it. He just had apparently was not even aware that he was hungry, and he really could no longer prepare meals for himself. So at that point, I had to get our daughter involved, you know, to come over for lunch and make sure he'd eaten lunch, and starting to get to the point where we're worried about whether he should even be alone in the house for any period of time. So our daughter actually did come and move back in with us for a while, and she was here, you know, when I was working then, you know, which was very helpful. So in 2008 then, you know, things were not looking good. And it just so happened that there were two new clinical trials that became available, and now the criteria of depression was no longer an exclusion, you know, didn't exclude him from being in the clinical trial. So once again, we had a little glimmer of hope that maybe something was about to come along here that could help him. And so the first one became available in May of 2008, and it was at the Byrd Alzheimer Institute, and we took him there for a screening, and they screened with the MMSE test, and he scored only 12 out of 30 points. Huge drop from the several years earlier.
Sure.
And he needed at least 16 to get into the trial, so he did not qualify. He met all of the other criteria, but not that. And we were devastated. But the doctor told us that he could come back and try again in a couple of weeks. And he suggested even that I try to prepare him, you know, by reminding him what the day of the week was and the season and that kind of thing on the way down. And he said, but if he has Alzheimer's, he won't remember anyway, but why not try, you know? So he was scheduled and 2 weeks later. And this other drug in the meantime became available as a clinical trial, and both of them were aimed at reducing plaque in the brain, and one was a vaccine and one was an oral medication. So I scheduled it on 2 days off, back-to-back screenings. And the night before the first screening, I started thinking, what if he gets accepted into both trials? He can't be in both. So I was looking for the risks and the benefits of the two drugs to try to help make a decision about which clinical trial he should enter. And I happened upon another new treatment that was seeking FDA approval as a medical food, and it was still a good year away from being approved. But it said that it improved the memories of nearly half of the people with Alzheimer's that they had studied. And you don't hear that about the Alzheimer's drugs, that they improve memory. So I thought that was fascinating, but it didn't say what it was or what it did. So I got on the Internet, and I found their patent application on a website called Free Patents Online. It has every patent in the U.S. that's ever been. You can look at their patent applications. And I learned a whole lot about Alzheimer's from reading this and about their the medical food that they were proposing to help treat Alzheimer's. And basically, what I learned about Alzheimer's that many people and many doctors even are still not aware of is that it's a type of diabetes of the brain. It's been coined type 3 diabetes by a group at Brown University. And there are many, many groups that are studying the problem of insulin resistance in the brain. So when you say diabetes of the brain, what they have found is that there's insulin deficiency and insulin resistance in the brain of people with Alzheimer's. And they found this out by studying people who had died with Alzheimer's disease, looking at their brains. And these were people that did not have type 1 or type 2 diabetes. Hmm. And they found that in every single case that there was insulin resistance and insulin deficiency in their brains. And they coined the term type 3 diabetes. And then they began studying people who had died at various stages of Alzheimer's disease. And they found that it's localized to the areas that are affected by Alzheimer's early on in the disease, that it becomes more progressive and more extensive. It worsens with each stage of the disease until it's very severe in the last stages of the disease. And basically, you need insulin to get glucose into the cells in the brain. And glucose is the primary fuel for the brain and most of our other organs, you know, for most of our life. With the type of diet that we're on, especially here in the United States, where we have a relatively high carbohydrate diet, glucose is the fuel for the brain. And there's a problem getting glucose into the brain cells.
All right, we are going on a 3-minute break, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Dr. Mary T. Newport. Her website is coconutketones.com. Was Steve ever on any cholesterol-lowering drugs, and did he eat a lot of grains previous to this onset?
He actually was on, he was not on statins before he started having the problem. But after we moved to Spring Hill, around 2004, the doctor that we took up with here felt that his cholesterol was too high and did put him on simvastatin at that point. And he ended up being on that for about 5 years. So he already had a memory, he was already having memory problems at the point he went on the statins. We had around 2006 switched over to a more whole food diet. So, you know, basically vegetables, fruits, dairy, eggs, nuts, and whole grains. So, you know, whole grain bread and that kind of thing was still part of our diet at that point. He's kind of eliminated a lot of that grain, most of the grain from his diet at this point. But, you know, then we had just, we're trying to stay away from processed foods to try to avoid things like trans fats and high fructose corn syrup and all the chemicals, you know, whose names you don't recognize, you know, thinking that possibly they might contribute, and that if we could adopt a healthier diet, that maybe it would slow it down. So that was around 2006 that I just really became much more aware that diet could play a role, you know, in a disease like Alzheimer's.
Okay. So what did you do? How did you use coconut oil to take care of this to help it?
So basically, I was reading, you know, the patent application for this new medical food that was going to come out, and they talked about insulin resistance and the problem of getting glucose into the cells in the brain, and what happens is that, you know, the cells malfunction, and then eventually they die just from lack of fuel getting into the cells. So their idea was, what if there was an alternative fuel to glucose that the neurons could use that could, you know, keep the cells functioning and keep them alive? And where this idea came from goes back actually to the 1990s, and right around 2000, Dr. Richard Veach, V-E-E-C-H, of the NIH in Rockville, Maryland, they had done a study in which they looked at an alternative fuel that's known as ketones, and they did cultures of neurons that were models of Parkinson's and models of Alzheimer's. And some of the cultures, they put ketones into the mix, and the others they didn't. And they found that there were many more survivors in the neurons that had ketones. So what the heck are ketones? Okay. So throughout evolution, you know, and even today, as in the Philippines right now, there are people that go through periods of starvation. And during periods where you have food, you lay fat down. And, you know, any excess calories are stored as fat. And then if you go into starvation, you use up the glucose that's stored in your body fairly quickly within 36 or 48 hours. And then you would have to start breaking down muscle. Muscle, the protein in muscle can be partly converted to glucose. And you would die within a week, though, you know, if you only had muscle to tap into, you know, during this situation, because you would become so weak that you would basically stop breathing. But because we have fat, we can use that as an alternative fuel. So once the glucose is used up, then you start breaking down fat. And some of the fatty acids, they can be used by muscle and heart muscle instead of glucose. But they don't cross the blood-brain barrier very well. And so the liver converts some of the fatty acids to ketones. And ketones are very easily cross the blood-brain barrier, and they're taken up very easily by the cells in the brain, and they do not require insulin to get into the cells. So the ketones can supply an alternative fuel to the brain. There's a few, you know, other than starvation, which is not very practical, you know, for somebody with Alzheimer's disease, there are some other ways to raise ketones. One is a ketogenic diet, and where this originated was about 90 years ago. They have used it during, you know, for that length of time to treat childhood epilepsy that was resistant to children sometimes try to 4 or 5 different drugs, and they still have frequent seizures, like hundreds a day of different types of seizures when they have certain conditions. And So a pediatrician discovered that a very high-fat diet that's very low in carbohydrate and has just enough protein to either maintain your muscle mass if you're an adult or allow for growth if you're a child, that that type of diet will greatly raise ketones to basically the level that you see during starvation. And for some reason, this will control seizures completely in about 25% of children who go on this strict diet and adults. And so that particular way of raising ketones has been around for a long, long time. But it's very difficult. It's a very strict diet. Everything has to be weighed and measured to the gram at every meal. And there's something called the birthday syndrome. You know, we're on the child's birthday. Sometimes the parent will let them have a piece of cake, and they'll immediately have a seizure. And it can take several days to get back into ketosis once they get back on the diet. So, again, it's a very difficult way of life to maintain, particularly somebody who has Alzheimer's, an adult, somebody who doesn't maybe comprehend the importance of staying on a diet. They're going to have a very hard time with it. So,
sure.
So then you think, well, what other ways can you raise ketones? And in this particular case, well, Dr. Veach has developed the ketone ester, and it's something that will be able to be put into foods and into drink, and it can raise ketones also to the levels that you see during starvation or ketogenic diet. So this has been kind of working its way. It has been approved as for use in healthy adults. But now he's wants to study it for Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. And there's a study going on in Oxford, England right now, a pilot study with Alzheimer's. So it's making some progress, but it's just not available yet. But another alternative is to use a particular type of oil, medium-chain triglyceride oil. And this was in the patent application, and this was the active ingredient in the medical food that I had read about. And the reason it struck a chord with me, it's called MCT oil for short, is that we used MCT oil in the newborn intensive care units while I was in training, and we would add it to the feedings of our tiniest premature newborns because they tolerated it very well, and it would help them gain weight much quicker. And then the formula manufacturers began adding it to the infant formulas, and they would add more to the premature formulas to give them more calories and help them grow faster. So when I read about MCT oil, I immediately knew what it was. One thing I did not know is that it comes from coconut oil. It's extracted from coconut oil. So that's where that came in. But what happens with MCT oil, when you consume it, it's taken directly to the liver, doesn't need digestive enzymes to get in, so it's absorbed very quickly, and part of it is converted to ketones. And the ketones, once again, you know, get into the circulation, they go to the brain, the brain can take them up and use them as fuel in place of glucose. And it turns out that and it turns out that the medium chain triglycerides themselves are probably also an alternative fuel. They also cross into the blood-brain barrier. And there are brain cells called astrocytes that nourish the neurons. And in the astrocytes, part of the medium-chain triglyceride is converted to ketones there as well. And also some of it feeds, the rest of the medium chain feeds into this chemical pathway that makes ATP, which is the final energy molecule that allows the cells to carry out their functions. So both the ketones and the medium-chain triglycerides can provide an alternative fuel to brain cells.
Oh, my goodness. And this is good for late-stage Parkinson's and also for Alzheimer's?
Yeah, all stages. And I think the earlier, you know, what I've seen now that it's been several years is that the earlier someone starts it in the disease process, the more likely they are to stabilize and to stay stable for a long period of time.
Wow.
I've had some people now just recently reporting to me that they've been stable for 2 to 4 years after some improvement. But they were people that were in the earlier stages of the disease. So the sooner the better, basically.
Sure. All righty. We are going to our top of the hour break. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour.
being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tool.
Are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9%.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is Dr. Mary T. Newport. That's N-E-W-P-O-R-T. Her website is coconutketones.com. And you were talking about coconut oil. Now, some coconut oil, and you're also talking about medium-chain triglycerides, and some coconut oil do not contain those essential elements.
Well, actually, pretty much all coconut oil does contain medium-chain triglycerides.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's almost 60% of coconut oil are these medium-chain triglycerides. And basically, what I learned this because I was reading this patent application for a medical food, and they were using MCT oil, which is extracted from coconut oil, as their active ingredient. And they had found that it improved the memories in nearly half the people with Alzheimer's that took it. And they had two studies. It was interesting. They had a pilot study in which the same people came on two different occasions. And one time they got placebo, and the other time they got the medium-chain triglyceride oil. And they did a whole battery of tests. And what they found was that nearly half of them had improved scores on these memory tests, significantly improved scores. And
so on the same ones that Steve had taken earlier?
This was actually even more extensive testing than what Steve had taken.
Okay.
Okay, and then they did a longer study then, a 90-day study, and this one involved 152 people. And they found that after 90 days, that roughly half, again, it was 40-something percent, had improved scores on it's a test called the Alzheimer's Disease Assessment Scale Cognitive. It's a 75-point test. And they found that nearly half of the people improved, and they were people with a certain genetic profile that tended to improve more than the others. This was very intriguing. And we, you know, when I was reading this, it was about 1 a.m., and he was set up for a screening at 9 a.m., in the morning, so I didn't have time to run out and get coconut oil. Mm-hmm. And so we went on to the screening, and for this particular screening, they were using the MMSE, the 30-point test. And this time he scored 14, slightly better, but still he needed 16 to get into the study. So we were still fairly devastated that he didn't get accepted. And the doctor there said, let's have him do a clock test, which is a very specific test for Alzheimer's. You draw a clock, and then they tell you what time to put in, and Steve didn't even really get that far. He drew just a few little random circles, not even one big circle, just a few random circles and a few numbers, and you can see that on the website. It just wasn't organized like a clock, and she took me aside, and she said he's really on the verge of severe Alzheimer's at this point.
And, oh, dear.
Yeah, so on the way home, I thought, what do we have to lose? I'm going to pick up some coconut oil, and when we got home, I started researching everything I could find about coconut oil. I found the fatty acid composition and was able to figure from that that it was 60% medium-chain triglycerides. I kind of had to really review my freshman biochemistry on that. And then the dose that they were using for the product is now called Axona, A-X-O-N-A, and it is available now as a prescription. But the dose that they were using was 20 grams, which is about 4 teaspoons, and I figured that that calculated to 7 teaspoons or a little over 2 tablespoons of coconut oil. And so the next morning, that day he was scheduled to screen at 1 in the afternoon. And I thought, well, you know, it's solid at room temperature. And so I put it in some oatmeal to warm it, you know, and just mixed it into the oatmeal. And he ate it. He didn't have any problem from it. I took it too. I thought, I'm not going to make him take anything that I won't eat.
Sure.
Because you hear, you know, there are all these myths out there about coconut oil. And
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.